today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey everybody, time for another Code Pen Radio, episode number 118. If you recall, not so long ago, we launched a new, I guess you could call it a product, although that feels so like, we have a new product here at Code Pen. Like I kind of hate that kind of talk, but I guess it kind of is one. The idea is it's a weekly newsletter. Before that, we sent a monthly newsletter, and even that we weren't particularly monthly about. And we'd be like, oh yeah, we got to send one of those things. Who's going to do it? Kind of almost like that. The Code Pen Spark is way more fun. We're like, let's do this thing for real. Let's make it, you know, one of the things we really got going on at Code Pen is how much cool stuff people do. It's like, we can't share it enough. There's way too much that we could even share. So let's just have yet another outlet on it and do a weekly email. Tim Holman is here.
Yo.
And he kind of took the lead on it in a sense and was like, let's make this thing work. And let's make it kind of like CMS first in a way. And we've already talked about this in the podcast, but in a sense, we generate it through like an admin area on CodePen and then have that feed a web version of the newsletter. So that always like warms my little heart because I just like it when content has like a URL and kind of a permanent place in the world. And so that happens. And then it also wrote like some cool JavaScript template-y stuff that turns that into HTML, which we feed to, you know, another system, which sends that email out to everyone who gets the Code Pen Spark, which is a whole lot of people in the world. So thanks everybody who's been getting that email. If you don't want to get it, of course, you can unsubscribe for it, but we've had really good feedback on it. I think number 12 just went out today. Is that right? Marie, who's here, also
yep.
here.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, that was number 12 that just went out this morning.
So 3 months.
Yeah.
3 months of the Spark.
I think number 12 is the best one to date.
Yeah.
I agree with you. That was my favorite one so far.
I like the very first one in it is a post. Gosh, sorry. I should be able to remember everyone in the world's name. But we have, you know, it's going on a million users at CodePen. Can't remember them all, you know. But it was a beautiful story of like, I got started just drawing art.
I was at Sasha.
Converting things from Dribbble, and then I did the daily CSS images and did Codevember and that stuff, and like now you can watch the work evolve. I think that's so satisfying to watch somebody like spend 3 months working really hard and have it be so clear that they're way better now than they were at the beginning.
Absolutely, that story is so cool, and her designs are the coolest. I just love seeing them.
If you saw the one that stood out was the little vampire drippy blood band-aid.
That was my favorite. That was my favorite by far.
Oh,
so cool.
That was one of 12 things that went out in the Spark this week. And so maybe we'll talk about some of the trials and tribulations on the way there. One of the kind of the funny things that happens, there's a great CodePen account and website and, you know, thing in the world called Really Good Emails. That perhaps you've seen, and they kind of use CodePen in a sense is like an archive. And it's a little weird to look at their email account because they don't use the CSS panel or the JS panel like at all. It's just the entire content of the email dumped into the HTML, which normally is kind of like, oh, don't do that. You know, it's hard to read your stuff. But in this case, it kind of has to be that way because that's how those emails actually are in their real, as they were actually sent out to actual inboxes, you know? So it kind of makes sense to use in that way. Anyway, they're great. And we started sending the CodePen Spark. And in the early days, they like sent us a DM on Twitter that's like, dude, your email's all kinds of busted.
They weren't wrong.
Yeah.
we had some issues in the early days there.
Yeah. I feel like coding emails, I definitely, when I was doing that, I was like, how did I end up with this job? I brought it upon myself.
It's easy to make fun of, you know, because the mobile, you know, emails are, you know, whatever. Coding like it's 1999 or whatever. Everybody knows we still send them with tables. You got to inline a lot of the styles. You know, you just have to do this like kind of gross stuff that you'd probably never do outside of email design, but just that's just the way it needs to be done, which so that it looks okay in the kind of wild, wild west of email clients, of which there's more variety spread across the landscape or whatever you want to say as there are web browsers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there are so many different ways that people see and read their email that, you know, the basic browsers that you have to consider in regular web development are, it's almost dwarfed by all the different ways that people can read their email. So that that definitely presented a challenge, especially in the early stages of the Spark, was just, you know, getting this to look normal, at least normal, in everybody's inbox.
Yeah, it's definitely like, oh, it works for me.
Oh, we're as guilty as anybody else, for sure. Like, because we, you know, it's the, so like on desktop, you're like, I don't know, it looks fine in Mac Chrome, you know, and then, yeah, and then that bites you. Marie's really good at using, is a Firefox user through and through, so you find a lot of our Firefox bugs. And we're, on a good day, we're not that bad as developers. We test all the stuff, but sometimes that gets through because, you know, I'm particularly guilty of it. I like and prefer Chrome on my Mac, and sometimes stuff just goes out on accident that I only looked in that. And then the email version of that is like, look in, you know, send it to yourself and look at whatever thing you happen to be looking at, like your Gmail on your phone or Gmail on your thing or whatever your default thing is, mail app on your phone. And you're like, huh, looks good. Ship it, you know?
Yeah. And that was definitely the case in the early days. After we got some advice, you know, from really good emails, first of all, and then we had some feedback from members, we cleaned things up quite a bit. Chris, I think you had used a couple of tools to get that sorted out.
Right. Well, so it's when it's bad, it's like, can you send me a screenshot or whatever? Like, it would be really nice to see how bad and what bad and stuff. And we got those screenshots from a lot. And I think some of the early culprits for us was Outlook-related stuff, but it wasn't totally isolated to that. There was other problems, even Gmail in some situations. So we're like, okay, I mean, what are we going to do here? And I think anybody else who's been in this situation is, I don't know, actually, I'm trying to remember what I did first. I think what I did first, I think, was like, okay, this is a solved problem. Like, it's a complicated problem, but we're definitely not the first person to like send a malformed email. There's got to be, just like there is for web design and stuff, like templates out there that we can just steal that, I guess it's stealing, whatever. I mean, legal stealing, open source templates that
legal stealing.
That we can just use, and then we'll make sure that we don't screw it up while we drop it, our content in. And so, you know, I definitely, MailChimp has a bunch of those templates, and there's lots of them. You just Google around for it, you'll find them. So grow with a trusted source, grab that HTML and go for it. And I think I did that, and then even that didn't solve all the stuff. Because just, you know, I didn't really realize it at the time, but one of the things that, and you know, I'm sure there's email people out there that can correct me on this, but one of the things we had the most luck with, because, and let me set the stage a little bit, the way that the CodePen Spark email looks is that it's two columns, and we have like a thumbnail and then a title and then a description, and you can like, whatever, click the links and experience the thing. But it's a format. That's how it looks on the web. That's how we wanted it to look on the email. It kind of gives it this staggered, you know, brick wall kind of look thing. And we like it. I consider that kind of like the branding of what the Spark is, rather than one single tube of content. I think it looks cool. It's an appropriate format for email. And we do collapse it to one column if we can, with media queries and stuff. So in some email clients, it looks great. Single column, if there's room, it gets wider and stuff. That was our goal, and it's not an impossible thing to do in email. So we went with that. And then we had a lot of the luck happened when we're like, let's not ever resize the images. Like, don't upload a 500, don't upload a 1,000 pixel image. You know, God forbid, because it's just almost guaranteed that that's going to ruin it. So we just don't. We standardized this, like, in our particular templates, 260 pixels wide images. And now that we've totally standardized that, I feel like that was like the kind of like the final straw.
That was the end of the woes.
Yeah, that's when things really started to balance out. Plus, you know, at that smaller size, we don't have to worry about sending people gigantic emails with, you know, huge image files in them.
That tends to not be talked about so much, you know, like the performance of emails, but I don't know why it isn't, because it seems relevant, you know?
Yeah, it matters just as much as it would matter anywhere else. If you're looking at an email on like a data plan, you're going to want it to not be very heavy. And so just going with those smaller images really, you know, made it so that we don't have to be as concerned about what we're sending over.
Yep. There's still a bunch of them. It's not like, you know, we could do better. We could have no images at all, but, you know, everything's a trade-off.
Yeah.
I'll draw all the images out myself.
Yeah. Ship like super optimized PNG, two color PNGs or
black and white sketch drawing.
That would be funny.
Future.
Be like, our computer's broke this week. Tim had to draw.
to draw out the spark. Yeah, the way that the emails are generated, I truly adore. I feel like that's definitely the best part of it. In that, we kind of like go through our own pipeline completely. It's like we have the data on the page that we're looking at with like, oh, here's our spark, and then like a small admin thing to turn that into an email. But that uses the define API. Is it the define API?
It is. I mean, I guess I don't know if we ever call it define, but the URL has define in it for sure.
Right. Oh yeah. What do we call it?
I think we just call it our post API, which also probably isn't a very good name. The point is you can send a chunk of JSON at the CodePen editor, and it, you know, of course, if it's in the right format or whatever, you can say, oh, this pen should have these settings, it should have this title, but more importantly, it should have this HTML, this CSS, this JavaScript, and it'll open up a new pen with that stuff in place. It won't save it for you, but saving is just a click away then.
Yeah, I feel like that's a magic moment when you press that, and then you're like, oh wow, here's my entire email, and you know,
yep.
It's all kind of like up and working.
And it gives you a chance to tweak some things if need be, and we do that because the email version of it is slightly different than the web version. You know, we write an intro for it, and we drop in the latest jobs that have been posted on CodePen and meetups that are happening and stuff. So the email is slightly different than the web version, but that's good. It gives us that opportunity. It's kind of a nice balance between doing all the work for us and giving us an opportunity to tweak it.
Right. But then it has the final extra step. I don't know. Is this a homegrown thing? Are we using like a library for it that inlines all the CSS? It kind of goes through and matches it all and turns it into the real nitty gritty email.
Yeah, you know? Actually, that's kind of a good point. Like it does do that, and I wonder if that's still smart or not. Because it. So I guess I should back up. Just a tiny bit, like while we were trying to nail down this thing and, you know, we were having problems and trying to fix it and stuff, one of the tools that we use to make sure that instead of just like shipping it and waiting for support emails, we're like, we should probably be a little bit more proactive about our thing. There's actually a kind of a CodePen-like app out there called Litmus, which I think if anybody's, I don't know, worked in this kind of like email testing world at all, has heard of. They seem to be the absolute kind of big dogs of email testing is Litmus. And, you know, if you're using it on desktop, it's a split view kind of thing where you write code on the left and on the right, you see the results of that code like CodePen in a sense. But the result isn't just like, what does it look like in the current browser? It's like a grid of results of all kinds of email clients. So I guess it's a little bit more like, kind of like cross-browser testing, you know, that app that's integrated with CodePen where you can like open up a pen and you can see it like, show me what this looks like on Windows 10 in Edge 11 or whatever. And it will show you that live. I think they're more like screenshots in Litmus, but that's kind of all you need. Well, in some cases, whatever. You put the email HTML in there and you hit the button and it'll give you 30 email clients if you wanted what it looks like in there. So you have the opportunity to fix it. And we got it dialed in just right. And I've kind of saved it in Litmus to make sure that like, okay, this is for sure right. So if anything is wrong, it's because we screwed it up somewhere that's deviated from this template. So there's that. So I guess what I'm worried about then is that then we ship it through our Rails Z system, which does manipulate the template. So I'm like, God, I wonder if that's smart. I wonder if we should stop doing that. Cause like, it's fine.
It comes out. It's so good though. Like building your email in a pen with separate CSS and not having to inline everything. It's like that took the pain away completely. I feel like that we should probably.
Well, that's how we used to do it. Yeah, that is kind of cool, right? So we we used to develop our template, you know, we just write kind of raw HTML in the format that we should use it in, then also write the CSS. So we could just use class names and all the normal stuff, just develop how you normally develop. And then it would grab an inline. And I believe we just found a Rails gem that would do that work for us.
And, good.
Yeah, it was cool. The thing is, I think we should stop doing it because, you know, the HTML template as is right. Like, you don't need to inline the stuff because we've proved that it's right because Litmus is showing us screenshots of the email right. And then we go mess with it and then send it out. So it's like, maybe we should. Anyway, let's not. The reason against messing with it is everything seems fine right now. So
yeah,
let's not mess with it.
It is going smoothly.
Yeah. Anyway, Litmus is cool. You should use that. We, you know, have maintained an active account on it. I think we may have paused it, perhaps, because I think it's a fair price for how awesome of a thing it is. And, you know, one of the reasons it's a big dog is, like, you know, you'd think MailChimp would dip their toes in this stuff, right? Like, if you're sending out an email through MailChimp, you would be like, I want to see what this looks like and all these things before I send it out, because I'm about to blast this thing off to whatever, tens of thousands of users or something. And if it's wrong, I'm going to look like an idiot. So they have that built into their app, but guess what it is? Litmus, you know? They just partner with them and do it. So it's like, I think all the, you know, if you're doing a good job, you just let Litmus do it. So free advertising for them. Good work. Good work.
Yeah. I mean, how do they, I can't even begin to solve that problem. It's like, oh, you have all these different clients running on weird machines and getting screenshots of what they end up looking like. Yeah. Oh.
It's the ultimate developer product. I mean, that's how cross-browser testing works too. And what's fascinating about them is they have some emulated devices, right? Like, cause like Opera or whatever might provide itself as a kind of executable VM kind of thing. And that makes sense that you could spin up. You could spin up on an AWS instance or whatever and run Phantom on it. However you do it, I don't even know. But at least that one makes sense to me. Cross-browser testing, most of their machines are actual real physical machines. Even the phones and tablets and all that stuff. We've seen pictures of their setup and it's just like racks and racks of these actual physical devices that are set up to, you know, to receive requests, go to this website and spit yourself back out in real time. You know, it's not even a screenshot. It's like, then you get control over it and get to web inspect it. And I have no
idea. I use it every single day. It is so useful.
Oh, it's amazing how that works. Cool. So Litmus was cool. We got our template in order. We started on the back end and stuff. What else do we need to talk about with all this?
Well, the other aspect of sending out a big, big newsletter is that we had to think about, well, you know, we use SparkPost for sending email. And when we were talking about putting this together, we realized that we were going to more than quadruple how much email we were sending because we were going to send a weekly email to everyone that was subscribed to the Spark every week. So we, Tim Holman and I spent a little bit of time just going through the Spark Post plans, just figuring out like which one are we supposed to get onto now.
I had like a minor heart attack moment because we did that after we'd sent them out for maybe a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I like logged into the admin thing and it was like, you're 1,000% over your quota. And now, it's like, this is how much every email is costing. And I was like, oh no.
So the nice thing about SparkPost is that overages are not tremendously terrible. You know, when we went over, it wasn't like, it's like, all right, and now this month is going to cost you $1 million. It was, you know, more, but we were able to, based on those numbers, make decisions about moving up to the next plan. So we made one jump.
Crunched the numbers. It was a montage, calculators, serious.
That's true. Yeah. You know, our favorite thing is crunching the numbers.
Spreadsheets.
Because it's not just like if you go over, definitely upgrade directed to the next plan, because the next plan is so much higher that there's certain circumstances where paying the overage fee.
Right. There was a time where it actually made sense for us to stay paying the overage instead of jumping up to the next plan. But that time passed very quickly, and then we just jumped up to the next plan. But so we actually made two plan jumps, one right away when we started it, and then one like 2 weeks ago, I think, because we realized we were at the volume where we really did make, you know, need to make another change. And so luckily, like, Spark Post has been very helpful about that. They got in touch with us when they were like, hey, you know, you can make, you can jump up, you, you probably should jump up. And that was helpful. The other part, you know, that we had to do inside Spark Post was making sure that this was designated as the right type of email for when people unsubscribed. Because if it was designated as a transactional email, or, you know, the, there's two types of email. There's transactional and non-transactional in the view of Spark Post. And transactional is email that's related to your actual account. And then non-transactional is the other type of stuff that we send, promotional things. And so we need to classify this as non-transactional and make sure that when people unsubscribe from this, they were just unsubscribing from this. So that was a little bit of a challenge in terms of, you know, designating the email correctly and making sure that that happened in the right places. That was stuff that, that Tim and Alex did, so I can't really speak to it too much.
I think it was all Alex. I spent maybe 3 hours working myself into a fit of existential crisis, trying to understand, like, the relay of things that happen when you unsubscribe. It's like, oh, we have to have this service open, and it generates this unique ID, which somehow eventually translates to our user ID in the database.
It is rather confusing, right? Because you can imagine, you get a, you know, you're a user, you get an email in your inbox, and there's an unsubscribes link. Not only is it the law, it's the right thing to do. You know, if you don't want a newsletter, it should be real easy to unsubscribe for it. And so it's, but it, what's happening there is it's not just like CodePen and the user. There's a middleman here in SparkPost. And SparkPost is a business that also wants to protect its users and the, you know, the people as well. So if you click unsubscribe, what actually happens is it's a URL that doesn't hit CodePen itself. It hits SparkPost. And then you've, SparkPost is smart enough to be like, okay, they want off this list. I'm going to make real sure they are off this list. And so they keep kind of like blacklists on their side saying that this person unsubscribed from this person sending email to them. So they keep that. But they also have a webhook, meaning when that happens and they go on that blacklist, SparkPost then hits our servers. And so all this has to happen with some data, because we need to know, like, what user was it that unsubscribed? And we can't just, like, put their user ID. So it's like an obfuscated user ID. So that hits our servers, and we're like, oh, I see, that translates to this user. Let's make sure that we unsubscribe them in our system as well, so next month that doesn't get sent out.
Yeah. Is it a user ID? It might be the email. It might be like,
yeah, it might just be their email.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it is, but it's tricky because it means that you have to kind of make sure that that endpoint is kind of tested to make sure that it happens. And if you screw it up, there's not a lot of feedback, because if you send it again next month and you have screwed up that webhook or whatever, it'll get blocked. The user still doesn't get the email because it'll get blocked from the blacklist. But it's still a good idea to not send it at all, because you still like...
Right, because anything that we do send still counts against our sending volume, even if it doesn't actually go. So the point for us would be to take them off the list. It makes sense for us to take them off the list, because there's no point in sending an email and paying for that email when nobody's going to get it.
And if you resubscribe, you got to make sure they're off the blacklist. And then it's complicated even further by this idea of transactional versus non-transactional. If you screw that up and send it transactional, nobody's blocked. The transactional is like, for example, a password reset email. There is no blacklist for that on purpose, because you shouldn't be able to unsubscribe from a password reset email. that would be real bad, you know? So definitely send those types of emails as transactional, and send stuff that is intentionally unsubscribable as non-transactional. I feel like there should almost be more than just these two distinctions on SparkPost. I don't know if that's just absolutely a locked in thing or what, but like it kind of seems like there should be multiple lists and you should be able to unsubscribe from individual lists at the Spark Post level.
That's something that I feel like we should be able to do, but to be honest, the Spark Post docs are a little bit opaque, so I'm gonna have to do a little more digging to see if that's something we can do, because that would be, you know, that would be great if people could, if we could segment it a little bit more and make it easier to really just unsubscribe from this particular thing.
Right. And we need to manage it on our side perfectly well also, because we do have, you know, it's nuanced on our side. If you go to your user settings on CodePen, you can check and uncheck lots of different stuff. And we manage it correctly on our side. It's just like, it needs to be managed correctly, both on the CodePen side and on the Spark Post side. And it just needs to be really clean. And to be perfectly honest about it, it isn't in perfect shape yet. Fortunately, what isn't in perfect shape is kind of is like almost like okay because of the blacklist setup that catches it. But it definitely needs more work on our side, and we'll get it there. But nothing to worry about if you're listening to this show. It's mostly just internal
stuff. Yeah, we have all the good behaviors in place. It's just that it needs a little bit of fine tuning to work perfectly. Right. You know, but we're not making trouble with our Spark. We're being good.
Okay. Yeah, it was tricky. This is some behind the scenes stuff on how the Spark goes out. Early days, I was like, I had too much good luck too quick with email. They was like, email's easy. Why do I? Because what I did was I kind of went mobile first with the emails. Like I designed the emails to be like 300 pixels wide. So I just like didn't even deal with like the responsiveness of it, and there was so little to the design that like kind of raw table markup looked fine. But man, as soon as you want to do something a little bit fancy with email, it's like,
yeah, there's definitely a CodePen account. Oh, I can't remember the name of the girl that does it, but it's like all of these really incredible things within emails. It's like carousels.
Oh, you should have been to CodePen Denver, man. They presented. They're called Table TR TD.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's like a duo that, you know, maybe one of their most famous ones was like Minesweeper in email.
Right.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. But they do it. They have like a business where that's their like creative agency.
That's really cool.
Creating these, like, you know, can't believe you could do that in email kind of thing. They are an excellent.
Seems like an interesting space to want to work in, but
yeah. Well, they say it sometimes it takes them like, you know, 40 hours of dev to like get anywhere near one of these things. A lot of it is, you know, checkbox hack stuff, you know, like input checked sibling selector. So
I didn't even know you could put a checkbox in an email. There you go.
Yeah. That's actually cool. Territory, because it's like, I don't know, can you submit the form? Like, it's one thing having a form element in there. It's another thing is, does it allow you to post out? Because if you could post out, you could put a survey right in an email. How cool would that be, you know?
Yeah.
Usually what you see is like fake radio buttons, and you click on one of the radio buttons and it's coded with like URL parameters. So it hits the web, but it hits it with all the data necessary to know who this person was and what they clicked. Like, how do you feel about our app? 1 through 10, click the thing, and all you do is click it, and that data gets reported back. Doesn't require an actual form. Oh, anyway, that's some bonus tips for you, everybody. But I think we're coming up on half an hour, so I guess we could possibly call it.
Yeah, I think that covers it pretty well.
I guess we don't have a sponsor this week, so let me say two things that you can sponsor the Spark. And no doubt about it, I think it's our most valuable advertising spot on CodePen. I guess it feels weird to say, because you could sponsor this podcast, for example, and that's an amazing thing you can do. and it's a little less expensive on purpose than the Spark, because the Spark generates, like, if what you're looking for in your ad campaign is to generate some, like, mad clicks... do I sound like an old guy when I say mad click? Yeah.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, cool. Well, I am old, so enjoy. They send a lot of
mad clicks.
Yeah, I didn't.
Well, it does get a lot of clicks because it goes out to a lot of people, and it also stays right on CodePen. We have a permanent page for every Spark.
And there's only one sponsor per thing. It's very lightweight. Right. It's very tasteful. If you have a cool company, we'll absolutely approve it. If you have an awful company, we won't approve it. Sorry.
Yeah, we will say no to that.
But it's worth doing, and we have some data now. So if you're interested in I'm potentially interested in that, but I'd like to see some data, just email us support@codepen.io or chris@codepen.io. Either way, and I'll send you that data, and you can look at it and decide whether you want to sponsor it. It being this podcast, display advertising on the site, you want to post a job. We have interesting data with posting jobs on CodePen. It could be the CodePen Spark. Lots of opportunities there. I guess that'll be our ad. Our ad is that you can buy ads.
It's a very meta ad.
Very meta ad. Okay, bye everybody.
Bye everyone.
See ya.
Six, zero, three, one, eight.